Those who walk the paths of knowledge and yoga worship only him. So that's Jnana Yoga Margi, those who walk on Jnana and Yoga, Bhaje Ye Sabha. They're worshiping the same. For it is him they perceive as the impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma. So here you have Brahman is referring to the Brahman and Atma to the Paramatma. So Jnana is matching with Brahman and Yoga is matching with Atma. Purport. Those who are fond of mental speculation, Jnana Marga, or want to meditate in mystic yoga to find the absolute truth, must approach the impersonal effulgence of the Lord and his partial representation respectively. Such persons cannot realize the eternal form of the Lord. Jnana Yoga Marga Tande Bhajaye Sabha Brahma Atma Rupe Tande Kare Anubhav. Those who walk the paths of knowledge and yoga worship only him, for it is him they perceive as the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. So sarva kalamidam Brahma. Everything is actually Brahman. Everything's actually Krishna. But yayatamam prapadyante, how you get reciprocated with by Krishna depends on how you approach him. What is your mood? Everything's Krishna. There's nothing that's not Krishna. So there's the lowest levels, that's the V-karmis. They are approaching Krishna in a mood of wanting to enjoy with envy, lust, greed, in a sinful, exploitive way. We were just studying the 16th chapter Bhagavad Gita. People who are arrogant, envious, who are only thinking about how to do harm to others or who don't care about doing harm to others. So they're also approaching Krishna. They're also approaching Krishna. All the living entities that they're exploiting or being violent to are all parts of Krishna. Vivinamsa, they're all Krishna's Vivinamsa expansions. All the material energy that they're trying to exploit and control and manipulate, earth, water, fire, air, ether. They're all Krishna. But because the vikarmis, the sinful persons, are approaching Krishna in an exploitive, envious, violent, selfish way, the reciprocation that they get is they get forms that are ugly and disgusting. You see, the forms that people, that entities who adopt a demoniac mentality get, you know, snakes and lizards and vultures, abominable looking forms. Among the animals, you see many creatures that are, isn't it, that are hideous? So their forms are reflecting their mentality. Then you have the karmis. So the karmis, they're also approaching Krishna. Again, what is there but Krishna? They're approaching Krishna also in an exploitive way, but they have some little idea that they should follow the universal rules. That if you want to exploit the material energy, at least do it this way. Work an honest livelihood, give in charity. So they also get Krishna. But how do they get Krishna? They get a body that's more attractive. And then there's gradations. Just like there are more attractive animals, eagles and tigers. They're more attractive than vultures and lizards. Or you get a human body. Of course, even human body, it's not so nice if you think about what the human body is made out of. What is it really? All of us are embarrassed by our body. Aren't we embarrassed by our body and our bodily functions? The constituents of our body? You cut yourself, you blood and pus, and mucus, so many things. Okay? Sweat. So embarrassing having this body. We're always trying to pretend that it's nicer than it is with our clothing and our, you know, grooming and whatever, but it's awful. And this body is basically the how Krishna manifests when we have an exploitive mentality. This is the reciprocation that we get. You could say that the body is the gross form of our mentality, of our desires. So if you have very low desires in the mode of ignorance, then you get like a body of a lizard or a snake. Or a monster on other planets. You know there are monsters on other planets, right? Yakshas and Rakshasas. And if you're trying to exploit material nature in the mode of passion, then you get this human body. And if you're trying to exploit material nature in the mode of goodness, then you get a finer body. You get a demigod body that's more made of the finer elements. The demigods don't sweat. They can digest all of their food. They can eat, Prabhupada says, the demigods only eat food cooked in ghee. You know, with the story of Urvasi, when Urvasi was cavorting with Pururva, she said, I have two conditions, she said, that I never see you naked except when we're conceiving children, and that I only eat food cooked in ghee. Those two things. Demigods, they don't eat salads. Or boiled vegetables. They don't have any problem with digestion. That's a little higher body. So that's if you're still wanting to exploit the material energy, but you want to do it in the mode of goodness. You want to do it with love and kindness and consideration and empathy and charity and all those good qualities. The demigods are no longer controlled by the baser forms of lust and greed and envy, but they're still there, but not on such a great degree. And then higher, if you want to be a great sage, then you can go on the planets of Janaloka and Tapaloka, where they have still material bodies, but they're effulgent. And if you decide, wait a minute, this is not a very good way to deal with Krishna. Going through all these bodies one after another, Twaktvadeham, giving up one body after another, taking birth one after another. Whether it's a lizard body, whether it's an eagle body, whether it's a human body, or whether it's a deva body, I'm tired of exploiting the material energy. So the next step is you might think, okay, I'm just going to be detached. This gyan that's talked about here, this does not mean studying how to cure cancer. It does not mean studying how to fix an automotive engine. It does not mean studying how to do embroidery work, although we're not opposed to any of those things. But this kind of gyan means that you know the world for what it is. You know that the world is just shadows. It's just shadows. I was just reading how Shrutadev, when Krishna went and visited his two friends, one of them was named Shrutadev, very poor man, and he said to Krishna, my dear Lord, you are sleeping. Yoga nidra, you're sleeping. He said, just like when we sleep, we dream. Everybody dreams, right? You dream? Yeah. Could you imagine if that what you dreamed about somebody was really experiencing? Wouldn't that be interesting? If your dreams created a world? Oh, that's what happens to Mahavishnu. When he dreams, according to Shrutadev, when he dreams, this is his dream. That's Krishna. He just dreams something and it exists on some level. And we're all walking around in his dreams. It's a shadow world. It's a reflection world. Just like our dreams don't have much substance. They're something. They're electrical impulses in the brain. It's not that they're nothing, but they're not really substantial. If you make a lot of money in your dream, it doesn't really do you any good. You get married in your dream, you're still lonely when you wake up. It doesn't matter. So everything in this world is like that. Everything is just, you know, fleeting. It has no substance. We're thinking, you know, I want to be a billionaire. But if someone said, okay, you could be a billionaire for half a second. So that the whole life is like half a second. You know, Mahavishnu goes, oh, and it's over. For the whole universe. Like to speak of our lifetime within the universe. Nothing. And then any substance. I mean, we've had so many lifetimes and we don't even remember them. In our other lifetimes, I'm sure we were millionaires or we were paupers or we were famous movie stars or we were... And now we don't even care. If you could go to a good astrologer and they said, in your last life, you were, you know, whatever... Winston Churchill. You go, oh, that's interesting. I mean, what would you do with it? It doesn't even matter to you. It's all ephemeral. So everything we're doing in this life is also ephemeral. There's no substance to it. So this is what I've just been talking about, is gyan. Gyan, when you say, it's foolish. There's no meaning to it. It's like playing a game of Monopoly. You ever seen people playing a game of Monopoly and get really angry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Seen people play a game of Monopoly and get really, really angry. Why did you take my hotel? It's just play money, guys. So we get very emotionally invested in this world, and it's just a game of Monopoly. So gyan means you figure that out, and you say, what am I doing? Why am I emotionally invested in this world? Okay, let me just nothing. Let me just nothing. There was a famous Celtic folk song I remember listening to as a child, that my mother won't let me marry you because all men are cheaters, so I'm just going to stay single my whole life. That's gyan. Everything's cheating, everything's suffering, everything's nothing, so I'll just be nothing. So then you also get Krishna. And the Vikarmis and the Karmis, they're getting Krishna in the form of Bhumiralapana Lovayu. They're getting Krishna in the form of the material energy in different ways. And the Gyanis, they also get Krishna as Brahman. Brahman ohi pratistham. Amrita, what is it? Ohi pratistham. Amritasya vyasyacha. Shasvatasya tadharmasya sukasya ikantikasya. Krishna says, I am the basis of this Brahman. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti svasesha vasudadi vibhuti vinam tad brahma nishkala manantam asesha bhutam. So it's Krishna is the Brahman. But what do you get there? I just read a very sad and funny, sadly funny, letter from a godbrother. It wasn't written to me, it was written to someone else. He said, yes, I'm not practicing Krishna consciousness anymore. I've become a Buddhist. And what I really like about Buddhism is that it's all up to me, he said. This was really funny about it. He said, my guru has taught me that no guru can help me. Puzzling over that one. No guru or God can help me, and I'm just going to be one with the nothingness. So the jnanis, they get Krishna in the form of just, not nothingness, but almost nothingness. Something like deep sleep. If you've really had a hard day, deep sleep is very nice. But who wants to stay in deep sleep forever? If life's been really tough, just sitting and doing nothing is very pleasant. Although I've read the brain research shows that men are able to do nothing and women are not. And that whenever a man's doing nothing, his wife will come up to him and says, what are you doing? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? The car needs to be fixed. How can you be doing nothing? But if you've had if things are really tough, it's nice to just do nothing. But how long do you want to do nothing? Just to exist. Someone came to me recently and said, oh, I did something really stupid and I'm so embarrassed, I wish I could just die. That's a desire to be nothing. I wish everything could go away. I wish you could just go away from everything. Oh, I'm so tired of my husband or my wife, I'll just want to leave. I'm so tired of this place. That's a desire for nothing. So then there's the yogis. Now, the yogis, they figured out that they don't want to just enjoy earth, water, fire, air, ether. That that's not very satisfactory in this ephemeral life. But they've also decided that they don't want just nothing. They want something higher than that. So a lot of yogis, of course, are interested in, and they're still interested in manipulating the material energy, but through subtle means. So we're not really talking about those yogis. The yogis who perform yoga to get power. They still want to exploit the material energy. They're just trying to do it subtly instead of grossly. It's like some people try to manipulate the material energy with their arts. some with their fame, some with their money, some with their power and relationships, some with their knowledge, and some people with subtle power. We used to have a book in our Gurukul library about this man called Wolf Messing, who was born with yogic powers. And he especially had the power of being able to influence another's mind. So it was during World War II, and he was Jewish, so Hitler was trying to kill him. And he managed to escape, and Stalin gave him shelter in Russia. He thought he would probably be a good weapon against the Nazis. And Stalin tested him. At one point, Stalin said to him, "I want you to go rob a bank." So he went in the bank with a blank piece of paper and handed it to the cashier and told the cashier, "This paper is a letter from the president of the bank telling you to give me 100,000 rubles. And the man turned over to him 100,000 rubles. Just looking at the blank piece of paper. Another time Stalin said, "Okay, I'm going to put you in a high security building and I want you to get out without anyone stopping you." So as he was trying to get out, he just mentally told all the people that he was the head of the Secret Service, who he didn't look anything like at all. I forget the man's name, you know. "I am Vladimir," whatever. And when they saw him, that's who they saw. They didn't see him. They saw him as somebody else, and he just walked right out. So he had that power. So a lot of people who are interested in mystic yoga, they're not really interested in something transcendent. They're interested in controlling people's minds or making something appear from a distant place. Now, there are people like this today. You know, they create a little gold in their hand. They're not really creating it. They're just pulling it from another place. And they get followers and people listen. "Oh, yes, I will do whatever you say. You are actually God." They don't question, if you're God, why are you not beautiful? Why are you getting old? What kind of God is old and ugly? They don't ask those questions. No. But here we're not talking about that kind of yogis. We're talking about the yogis who are interested in something transcendental, but above Brahman. So they have some interest in God, but they only have an interest in God, or they only have knowledge of God, as relates to the material world. They don't have knowledge of God in his home. So they're trying to connect with the Paramatma. And here most of them are looking for knowledge. So the gyan, although the word gyan means knowledge, the gyanis are not really exactly looking for knowledge. They're just looking for existence. They're looking for detachment. And the yogis, they're looking for knowledge. They want to know. Because the Paramatma is mostly concerned with knowing. He is, in one sense, Paramatma. He's the super self. The super self. Just like in our body, we have so many cells. And each of those cells is a living being with desires. But we are the super self of the body. Is that correct? Or in a business, you've got the boss. He's the super self of the business. That he knows where everybody is and what they're doing. And directing everybody, of course not perfectly. So God also has a form as the super self of the universe, as if the universe were one body. Actually, the universe is the body of Lord Brahma. So this universe is just a body of Lord Brahma, and we're all little cells in that body. And Krishna is the supreme soul. So he's knowing everything. I mean, I don't know what the cells in my fingernail are doing. My knowledge is the super self of the body is very limited. But Krishna knows. Tetrakyam chapimam vadi sarva kshetra chujabharata. Kshetra kshetra jayor jnanam yatajnanam atamama. So Krishna is also the self in all bodies. So one who's interested in Paramatma, they want to know everything. It's like if you could plug into a supercomputer that knew every single thing about the cosmos. You see, there's a lot of people who are looking for that, right? Especially scientists. Philosophers, they want to understand everything. How does everything work? What's the underlying principles that make everything tick? And many of those people are not very interested in gross sense enjoyment. They just want to know. And on the higher level, they want to know just to know. They don't want to know in order to manipulate the world. So some mystic yogis, they want to know in order to manipulate the world. So they're really in the same category of karmis. They're just a little bit more clever. And some of them may be even vikarmis. We have many examples in the Shastra of demons who practice mystic yoga to control the world through subtle means. Hiranyakashipu could make all of the trees bear fruit all year round, for example, by his mystic power. So we have, you can even be a demon and practice mystic yoga for that person. You touch the Paramatma, and through touching the Paramatma, you get to know how everything works. Well, if you get to know how everything works, you can manipulate it, right? And actually, there are instructions given in the 11th canto in which way to meditate on the Paramatma in order to get which kind of mystic power. But the yogis spoken about here are not trying to know in order to be a false lord and a false controller. They want to know because they just want to know. Just because knowledge is so pleasurable. They want the pleasure of knowledge. They want to be bathed in knowledge. Of course, that knowledge is neutral. It's above Brahman, so it's very detached knowledge. Both Brahman and Paramatma, there's very little or no emotion. Just knowledge. We have that in our world. We talk about some people who are just logical and not very emotional, other people who are more emotional and not logical. So the jnanis and the yogis, they're just logic, just detached. But they're only dealing with Paramatma, only dealing with Krishna in this world. Now, what's above is not discussed in this verse, but Prabhupada discusses in the purport. The eternal form of the Lord. So this Paramatma is not an eternal form of the Lord. Manifest, not manifest. But to be in touch with the eternal form of the Lord, one must approach Krishna with love. So the Vikarmis and the Karmis, they're approaching Krishna with a mood of exploiting. The Jnanis, they're approaching Krishna with a mood of just stop, detachment. Right? Like this person wrote this letter. He said, God is irrelevant to me. Whether he exists or doesn't exist doesn't matter because my gurus taught me that no God or guru can help me. And the yogis, they want to connect with Krishna to know. But the bhaktas, they want to connect with Krishna to love. So Vikarmis want to exploit in a nasty, violent way. The Karmis, they want to exploit in a sophisticated way. The Jnanis, they want to just be. The Yogis, they want to know. And the Bhaktas, they want to love. So because Krishna's form, we chant, those of us who chant the Gayatri, called the one mantra, the Kama Gayatri, the Gayatri of desire, that Krishna is the original being of desire. Of love. And we worship Krishna as the supreme lover and lovable object. He's there with his beloveds, with his brother, his consort, his servants, all in a relationship of love. They're not just knowing, they're loving. And loving means activities. It means adventures. What's the use of love if you don't have any adventures? You know, just sit around looking at each other. I love you. I love you too. I love you too. Yeah, and I love you too. You do things together. So there's Leela, Krida. Krishna has his play. Oh, that Yasoda Mayi, she's seeing the universe inside Krishna's mouth. She's putting Krishna to bed. She's dressing him. She's feeding him. Play. Cowherd boys are throwing balls with him. And he's so playful. Sudama Brahmana comes to his palace. And Sudama Brahmana came there because his wife was nagging him. You know, if your wife nags you enough, eventually you have to give in. Come on, you gotta go. Please, look how skinny you are. You don't have any clothes. You don't have any food. Come on, you got God as your friend. Come on, you gotta go. All right. And he thought, but I won't ask Krishna for anything. He didn't ask Krishna for anything. He just went. You know, if one of your old class friends came, and you know, people have to wash clothes by hand. If they don't have laundry soap, the clothes don't get very clean. You don't see that much in this country. In poor countries of the world where people are doing hand washing, if they don't have laundry soap, the clothes get all gray. And then your clothes get torn and you can't replace them, so his clothes were like that, Sudan Brahmanas. They were all gray and torn. You know, if one of your old classmates came and his clothes were all gray and torn, wouldn't you offer him some clothes? If you were unlimitedly rich, wouldn't you offer him some money? Krishna didn't give him anything. He left Krishna's palace. He had nothing. Nothing more than when he came. And he's going back and he thought, now this is interesting, this is love. He thought, how kind my Lord is not to have given me anything. You know, so we tend to go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I really want to pass my exam. Krishna, I really want a good husband. Krishna, I really want some money. Krishna, right? And if Krishna doesn't give, do we say, how kind Krishna was not to have given me that? And that's what Sudama Brahmana said, how kind Krishna was. He knew that I'm an immature devotee. And if I got any money, I'd fall down. Krishna didn't even appear to give him the bare necessities of life, let us speak of wealth. And still, he was saying, thank you. But then he goes home and there's a palace. That's love. Isn't that fun, to give people a surprise party? That's enjoyable. The whole day is going by on your friend's birthday and nobody even says happy birthday. You talk about, don't even say happy birthday. Let them think we forgot. And the whole day, thinking, God, I guess nobody remembers my birthday. And then last thing in the day, surprise, you know, and there's 200 friends there. And that's what Krishna did to Sudama. Surprise! He's a person. And one can enter into those pastimes of love. So it's our choice. Sarva kalami dam brahma. Everything is Krishna. How do you want to reciprocate with Krishna? Yayatamam prapadyante. He'll respond. If you want to exploit him in a nasty way, then you get to have a form made of blood, pus, and probably scales and claws and fangs too. And if you want to exploit him in a little bit better way, then you have this body. If you want to exploit him a little bit better way, then you get a demigod body. If you want to just be detached, nothing. Then you just get to be nothing. And if you want to just know, then you get to just know. And if you want to love and have fun, then you get to do that. So our question is, what do we want? That's the question. That's the question of life. What do we want? Not what do we want fleetingly, like you walk down the street and see somebody with something and say, oh, I want that. No, I don't want that. Not that kind of want. But what do we deeply want? What's at the deepest level of our desire? So bhakti yogi is someone who's trying to change their desires. That's our process of bhakti yoga. Everything that we do, worshiping the deity, chanting japa, taking prasadam, distributing books, cleaning the temple, cooking, studying Bhagavad Gita, everything we're doing is meant to change our desire back to its original form of love. That's its purpose. Bhakti yoga isn't just a series of activities like something mechanical. It's something to change the heart. We should be thinking, what do I want? Because eko vahunam yo vidadati kaman, whatever you want, you get. What we have now is what we wanted. And if this body is nasty, that means what we wanted was nasty. What do we want? What do we want? Love is selfless and kind and only concerned about the happiness of the other. It's fun. When there's anger in love, it's sweet anger. It's not vicious, controlling anger. Like one time, Jagannanda Pandit, he went to Bengal. He was visiting Sachi Mata and all the devotees there. And he thought, I'd really like to give something nice to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you love somebody, you want to give them something nice, right? It's one of the loving exchanges, giving and accepting gifts. You want to give something nice. So he spent a lot of money and a lot of time getting the highest quality of scented sandalwood oil. You know, know, a lot of the oils you buy today are not very good quality. Most perfumes people buy are just some sort of synthetic chemical. And even a lot of the so-called natural perfumes, they're not really very high quality. It's very difficult to get high quality perfume. It was interesting when I was in Oman, I told them, I said, you know, you have the best quality incense and perfume in this country. And the devotees there didn't even know. They said, oh, we go to India to buy incense and perfume. I said, no, you should be bringing it to India. So anyway, I spent a lot of time and energy getting the scented sandalwood oil. It took a long time, you know, getting a little batch, little batch, little batch. And finally, he got a big pot. And very carefully, you know, he was traveling by foot. He's very, very carefully carrying this heavy, big pot of sandalwood oil that took him a long, long time to make back to Jagannath Puri. So when he gets there, he gives it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says, here's some scented sandalwood oil. Actually gave it to Govinda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant, who said to the Lord, Jagannanda Pandit has brought this. He wants me to massage a little bit on your head every day. So it's also natural that when you get a gift for somebody, you want them to use it. You want to see that they're using it. It's always the problem when people give you an awkward gift that you really don't want to use. What do? You hide it in your closet, and when they come to visit, you put it out, right? Try to remember to put it out. Otherwise, they say, what's this doing in the bottom of the bathroom cabinet? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Govinda, he said, I can't use this oil. I was supposed to be a sannyasi. If I walk around with perfume, you know, what are people going to think? He said, look, why don't you just bring it to the temple and put it in the lamps and it can be burned for Jagannath. And that way all of Jagannanda Pandit's effort will be used. But Govinda didn't do that because he knew Jagannanda Pandit would be really upset. Jagannanda Pandit asked again, Govinda asked again, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said again. And finally Govinda said, Jagannanda Pandit said, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's not going to use this oil. He's just not going to use it. There's nothing I can do. Just take it to the temple and offer it to Jagannath. Jagannanda Pandit comes. He grabs a pot of oil. Must have been a clay pot. Grabs a pot of oil. He throws it on the ground. And he said, I didn't bring this oil. Who told you I brought this oil? And he goes to his room and starts fasting. He bolts the door. He fasts. And then after 3 days, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes knocking. Jagannanda Pandit, I'm going to the temple now. I'll be back in a couple hours. Have lunch ready for me, please. Jagannanda Pandit starts cooking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back and he serves. Jagannanda Pandit's serving him. And he's serving him so much. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate 10 times more than he usually eats because he was so scared, it said, that if he didn't eat, the Jagannanda Pandit himself wouldn't eat, because the Lord knew that those 3 days Jagannanda Pandit was fasting. And finally he said, that's enough. He said, I've already eaten 10 times more than usual. Let it be enough. He said, now you eat. Actually, first he told him, let's eat together. And Jagannanda Pandit said, no, I'll eat afterwards. And then when Mahaprabhu finished, he said, okay, now you eat. He said, I have some things to do first. I'll eat later. And then Chaitanya told Govinda, he said, you stay here. Make sure he eats. Said, come tell me when you've seen him eating. And that's what Govinda did. He came back. He said, Jagannanda Pandit is eating. When the Lord was eating, he said to Jagannanda Pandit, he said, even when you're angry, your cooking is delicious. So in love, there's even loving anger. Even that's there. All variety. In just Paramatma, it's just knowing. No emotions. No joy, no anger, no excitement. Just knowing. In Brahman, there's not even knowing. There's just being. And in this world, there's just suffering. Even our pleasure is suffering. Even our pleasure is nasty. We get so much pleasure from eating. If you think about what's actually going on, it's all nasty. It's just dream pleasure. So our choices are suffering, lower, middle, or higher suffering, varieties of suffering, being, just being, no suffering, which is being, Being in knowing, no suffering, but just being in knowing. Or being knowing in play. Those are our choices. And it's our choices. That's our choice. Krishna would like us to come play. It's like if you have a friend, you want to play with them. When you're little, you want to play fire trucks with them. And when you're bigger, you want to watch the football game with them or whatever, you know. You want to play with your friends. So Krishna wants to play with his friends. So it's our choice. What do we want? What do we want? What are we looking for? And that's the choice we're making every minute. It's not just like billions of years ago, I made a choice to leave Krishna, and now I really want Krishna, but I can't get... No, it's not like that. It's a choice I'm making every minute. And that is the purpose of what we're doing. Do I really want to enter into those pastimes? And one can enter into those pastimes now. It's not just, I have to suffer in this life, and hopefully when I die, I get to enter into those pastimes. One can enter into them now. Because Krishna is in the heart, that means all of his pastimes are enacted in the heart. And even this ISKCON movement is part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. It's one of the branches of the Chaitanya tree. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is enacting his pastimes now, here. If you want to see it that way. You know, you can see ISKCON as, it's like you can see Krishna as the material energy to exploit, you can see Krishna as being, you can see Krishna as knowledge, or you can see Krishna as beautiful Bhagavan. No, you can see ISKCON as some social club. Just like, and there's one part of the world where it's a Muslim country, and the Indians who go there to work often join ISKCON, even if they weren't religious in India. And I ask them why, and they say, we just were hankering for our own food and our own friends, you know. So you can see ISKCON as a social club. You can see ISKCON as a business. Here's a place where I can get my, you know, we have a lot of people like that, how I can get my visa to go to America. Or how I can get some position and status into some religious organization. You can see ISKCON as a way that I'm going to attain happiness and knowledge and detachment. Or you can see ISKCON as a way to join Krishna's pastimes. That depends on your vision. So thank you very much. And I'll be leaving the UK in a few days, and hopefully I'll be popping in and out over the next few months. And I don't know, I might be staying at the manor, that if you've got a place for me then. You haven't had any place for me this time. So I got to hang out with Ranul Lundaneshwar. So anybody, which was nice too. I mean, it is nice over there too. And not as nice as here, but it's nice. Don't tell them I said that. Hopefully it's not going over the internet, you know, and I'll go back there and they won't let me back in, you know. You became a traitor. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions.